Penguin Random House Audio presents Survival of the Friendliest, Understanding Our Origins and Rediscovering Our Common Humanity by Brian Hare and Vanessa Woods. Read for you by Renee Ruiz. For All Humans. E Pluribus Unum. Introduction. It was 1971, 17 years after Brown v. Board of Education declared that segregation in schools was unconstitutional, and schools all over the country were still in turmoil. Minority children often had to catch buses from one side of town to another, which meant they had to get up 2 hours earlier than white children. If they could afford to, white families sent their children to private schools, leaving only the poorest white children in the public school system. In the classroom, there was so much hostility between racial groups that children had very little energy for learning. Educators, parents, policymakers, civil rights activists, and social workers watched in dismay. Carlos, not his real name, was in the fifth grade at a public school in Austin, Texas. English was his second language. He answered questions with a stammer, and when the other children mocked him, he stammered even more. He became withdrawn, rarely speaking at all. Many social scientists had predicted that school desegregation would be an unqualified success. It was assumed that once all children were on an equal footing in the classroom, white children would leave school less racist, not just toward people of color in their schools, but toward those they encountered throughout their lives. Minority children would receive a first-class education, which would set them up for successful careers. However, when the psychologist Elliot Aronson looked in on Carlos and his classmates, he spotted a fundamental problem. The children in that classroom were not on an equal footing. The white children were better prepared, better equipped, and better rested. Many teachers were teaching minority children for the first time and were as bewildered by their new charges as their white students were. Carlos's teacher, seeing how badly he was being teased and not wanting to put him on the spot, no longer called on him, inadvertently isolating him further. Other teachers did not want minority children in their classroom. If they did nothing to encourage the white children's merciless taunting, neither did they do anything to stop it. In a traditional classroom structure, children are in constant competition for their teacher's approval. This inherent conflict, in which the success of one child threatens the success of another, can foster a toxic environment, and integration exacerbated this issue. Many of the white children had been at their school for years. They saw minority children as invaders, and inferior ones at that. The minority children, understandably, felt threatened by their hostility. Aronson convinced Carlos's teacher to try something new. Instead of the teacher holding court over the class, asking questions, singling out some students and neglecting others, Aronson suggested transferring a small portion of knowledge and its associated power to each student. Carlos's class was studying the journalist Joseph Pulitzer. Aronson broke the class into groups of six. Each member of Carlos's group had to learn about one stage of Pulitzer's story, and at the end of the exercise, the children were tested on his whole life. Carlos was in charge of Pulitzer's middle years. When it was his turn to say what he had learned, he stammered, as usual, and the other children made fun of him. Aronson's assistant casually remarked, "You can say things like that if you want to, but it's not going to help you learn about Joseph Pulitzer's middle years, and you'll have an exam on Pulitzer's life in about 20 minutes." The children quickly realized that they weren't competing against Carlos. They needed him. Making Carlos nervous made it harder for him to explain what he'd learned, so they became sympathetic interviewers, carefully drawing out what he knew. After several weeks of working like this on various projects, Carlos became more comfortable around the other children, and they grew friendlier. Aronson had introduced what's known as the jigsaw method, in which each child in a group has a piece of knowledge to contribute to a coherent lesson. Working this way for just a few hours each week had powerful effects. After only 6 weeks, Aronson found that both the white and minority children liked the members of their jigsaw group, regardless of their race, more than they liked the other children in their classrooms. They liked school better, and their self-esteem improved. Jigsaw children empathized with others more easily and academically outperformed children in competitive classrooms. Minority children showed the biggest improvements of all. Cooperative learning methods were repeated with similar results time after time in hundreds of different studies and in thousands of classrooms around the United States. Survival of the fittest. Cooperation is the key to our survival as a species because it increases our evolutionary fitness. But somewhere along the way, fitness became synonymous with physical fitness. In the wild, the logic goes, the bigger you are and the more willing you are to fight, the less others will mess with you and the more successful you will become. You can monopolize the best food, find the most attractive mates, and have the most babies. Arguably, no folk theory of human nature has done more harm or is more mistaken than the survival of the fittest. Over the past century and a half, it has been the basis for social movements, corporate restructuring, and extreme views of the free market. It has been used to argue for the abolition of government and to judge groups of people as inferior and then justify the cruelty that results. But to Darwin and modern biologists, survival of the fittest refers to something very specific: the ability to survive and leave behind viable offspring. It is not meant to go beyond that. The idea that the strong and ruthless will survive while the weak perish became cemented in the collective consciousness around the publication of the fifth edition of Charles Darwin's Origin of Species in 1869, in which he wrote that as a proxy for the term natural selection, survival of the fittest is more accurate and is sometimes equally convenient. Darwin was constantly impressed with the kindness and cooperation he observed in nature, and he wrote that those communities which included the greatest number of the most sympathetic members would flourish best and rear the greatest number of offspring. He and many of the biologists who followed him have documented that the ideal way to win at the evolutionary game is to maximize friendliness so that cooperation flourishes. The idea of survival of the fittest, as it exists in the popular imagination, can make for a terrible survival strategy. Research shows that being the biggest, strongest, and meanest animal can set you up for a lifetime of stress. Social stress saps your body's energy budget, leaving a weakened immune system and fewer offspring. Aggression is also costly because fighting increases the chance that you will be hurt or even killed. This kind of fitness can lead to alpha status, but it can also make your life nasty, brutish, and short. Friendliness, roughly defined as some kind of intentional or unintentional cooperation, or positive behavior toward others, is so common in nature because it is so powerful. In people, it can be as simple as approaching someone and wanting to socially interact, or as complicated as reading someone else's mind in order to cooperatively accomplish a mutual goal. It is an ancient strategy. Millions of years ago, mitochondria were free-floating bacteria until they entered larger cells. Mitochondria and the larger cells joined forces and became the batteries that power cell function in animal bodies. Your microbiome, which, among other things, allows your body to digest food, make vitamins, and develop organs, is the result of similar, mutually beneficial partnerships between microbes and your body. Flowers appeared later than most plants, but their mutually beneficial relationship.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?